I'm going to open the session. And we will take roll call, and then we will ask about closed session, and then go into closed session. And then we'll do the invocation and the rest of that later, okay? So may I have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Chavez. Salino.
Here.
Betancourt. Mayor Fast.
Here. Okay, we have two items for a closed session meeting this evening. And because these are first on our agenda, we're going to excuse ourselves into closed session. And we will come back after that. Is there any public comment on these two issues? Hearing none, we will dismiss ourselves and we will be back around 7 o'clock.
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. Welcome to our council meeting this evening. We have just met in closed session. We had two items. And I'd like to have our city manager, city attorney report on those two closed session items, please.
With respect to item number one on the agenda, the conference with labor negotiators, no action was taken. And with respect to item number two on the agenda, the potential litigation matter, no action was taken there. The council gave direction to city staff. And just for the record, Ms. Betancourt was not here for roll call, but did arrive at 6:08. So the record should reflect that. And she did participate in the closed session.
Thank you. We previously had our roll call already, so we will have our invocation now from Pastor Neil Harris of the Methodist Church, and our Pledge of Allegiance will be done by our Mayor Pro Tem Betancourt. Would you please rise with me?
Let us pray. Dear God, we ask your presence here tonight and on the council and its decision. We ask for wisdom. And Lord, we ask your special presence as we, on the Fiesta weekend coming up in a few weeks. We pray that it be a joyous and wonderful and fun time, a safe time, where we celebrate your blessings and we celebrate this great community. May it be a time of fun and of fellowship. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Please join the council in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just one more thing on the reporting out. I neglected to include on item number two, the conference with legal counsel, the potential litigation item. Mayor Fast did recuse herself and did not participate in the discussions on that matter. She recused herself before the discussions took place.
Thank you. Presentations this evening. There was one presentation that was omitted, and I have something special for our previous Mayor Pro Tem, Steve Rapata. Maybe I should make comments first. Steve was on our council since 2004 to 2011. And I'm going to go ahead and just read this plaque for him. To Steve C. Rapata, in recognition of your service to the community as a member of the Reedley City Council, Council Member 2004 to 2011, Mayor Pro Tem 2006 to 2008, and 2010 to 2011, presented by the Reedley City Council. And you got a bigger mallet than I do here. Very nice. And we thank you for your service. I probably should tell you that. You're welcome.
Congratulations, Steve.
A lot has changed in your life since 2004. You were single and got married and lots of different things. And we know that you'll stay involved in our community, and we look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Well, you know, I'll invite all of you to come out to Reedley High Stadium 11 o'clock Saturday morning. Our 8th grade team, we're 3-0 so far this year. And we've won by scores of 39-0, 38-8, and 43-6. But we're facing the toughest team in the league Saturday morning. So not being a part of this right now is giving me more time to focus on those young men. And they're doing an excellent job. And we're very proud of how they're representing Reedley every Saturday morning.
That's great. Thanks, so, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay, item 3, we have a proclamation for Pirate Band Day. Mr. Gibson, are you going to come up and speak? Mm-hmm. Would you like to come up to the microphone and just say a few words? And then I'll read the proclamation.
Okay. As you know, the community is a big part of what we do at the high school with the band, and it's a big driving force for what we do and putting on a good show. And this Saturday, we are going to have a big fundraiser. We do it every 4 years with the help of the Reedley Exponent. We get the kids with their instruments, and we march around town, and we go door to door trying to get people to subscribe to the Exponent and look for donations. And the Exponent's kind enough to donate a portion of that to us for fundraising. And it's just a great way to get the kids out in the community and show the kids firsthand how much the community really supports them and values what they do.
Great. I'd like to read the proclamation for you this evening. A proclamation of the Reedley City Council. Whereas the Pirate Band has always responded to the needs of the community at all parades and ceremonies, and whereas the Pirate Band has proudly carried the name of Reedley to neighboring communities' parades and ceremonies, and whereas the Pirate Band has brought to Reedley many honors bestowed at marching and concert festivals, as well as instant recognition as a dancing marching band. And whereas the individual members of the Pirate Band have brought to Reedley many local, state, and national honors and recognition. Now, therefore, I, Mary L. Fast, Mayor of the City of Reedley, and the Reedley City Council, do hereby proclaim October 1st, 2011, as Pirate Band Day, in recognition of their many hours, weeks, and years of service to the City of Reedley. And I'd just like to say that I used to be one of these band members. I really enjoy watching that band come around the corner and start marching, and I enjoy what you guys do with the kids and the good things that they're learning. So thank you very much.
I want to thank your drum section for serenading me at my visit across the street for an hour and a half.
The next item is item 4, a proclamation for Fire Prevention Week. Chief Isaac?
Yes.
Would you like to make
Mayor.
Some comments?
Yes, I would. Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. As you know, this proclamation you're about to read both acknowledges and promotes Fire Prevention Week, which will be October 9th through the 15th. Mm-hmm. It's a nationally recognized week sponsored by the fire service. And in Reedley, the way we promote it is through our open house event, which coincides during that time frame, and that will be October 13th, beginning at 5:30, and that lasts till about 8 o'clock in the evening or so. But there's an opportunity that we take to promote fire safety. This year's theme is protect your family from fire. So we're going to be focusing on educational events and having materials available for folks to come out. The kids will be able to learn and be interactive in certain things. Plus, we'll have demonstrations and a lot of equipment on display, as you well know, some of you that have been there before. So we have a really good turnout, and we'd really like to see you there. And with all that said, I'll let you do the honors.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to read the proclamation. of the City of Reedley. Whereas the City of Reedley is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting our city, and whereas fire is a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire. Home fires killed more than 2,500 people in the United States in 2009, according to the latest research from the nonprofit National Fire Protection Association. And fire departments in the United States responded to more than 360,000 home fires. And whereas cooking equipment is the leading cause of home structure fires and associated injuries, and the third leading cause of home fire deaths, heating and electrical equipment and smoking materials are among the leading causes of all reported home fires. Fires started by a candle in the home are reported as a U.S. fire department every 30 minutes on average. And whereas the risk of dying in a home structure fire caused by smoke materials rises with age, in reported home fires, working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in half. And whereas Reedley's first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrence of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education, Reedley's residents are responsive to public education measures and are able to take personal steps to increase their safety from fire, especially in their homes. Residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire. Whereas the Reedley Fire Department open house to be held on Thursday, October 13th, reinforces the theme of Fire Prevention Week and provides for public interaction and fire safety education. And whereas the 2011 Fire Prevention Week theme is It's Fire Prevention Week, Protect Your Family from Fire, effectively serves to remind us all of the simple actions we can take to keep our homes and families safe from fire during Fire Prevention Week and year-round. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mary L. Fass, Mayor of the City of Reedley, do hereby proclaim October 9 to 15, 2011, as Fire Prevention Week in the City of Reedley. And I urge all Reedley citizens to protect their homes and families by heeding the important safety messages of Fire Prevention Week 2011, and to support the many activities and efforts of Reedley's fire and emergency services.
Thank you,
Chief.
I have a question. Is it a law that landlords have to provide smoke alarms in their apartments?
Yes, it is.
Okay, item 5, Reedley Night Out. Chief?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Members of the council, it's with pleasure that I get to introduce Cindy Trimble to come up and talk to you a little bit about Reedley Night Out that is scheduled for this Thursday. Cindy's title, just as a note, Cindy's title has changed. She has been our community programs coordinator for several years, and her title is changing to police liaison officer. And that title is hopefully going to increase the communication between the police department and the community. A lot of responsibilities will remain the same, but the title changes. No pay change, though. but Cindy?
Thank you. I just wanted to read a little history for you about National Night Out. The National Association of Town Watch, NATW, is a nonprofit crime prevention organization which works in cooperation with thousands of crime watch groups and law enforcement agencies throughout the country. Since 1981, NATW has been dedicated to the development, growth, and maintenance of organized crime and drug prevention programs nationwide. NATW's network has grown to include over 6,500 crime, drug, and violence prevention organizations. National Night Out, which is also known as America's Night Out Against Crime, was introduced by the association in 1984. The program was the brainchild of NATW Executive Director Matt Peskin. In an effort to heighten awareness and strengthen participation in local anti-crime efforts, Peskin felt that a high-profile, high-impact type of crime prevention event was needed nationally. At that time, he noted that a typical Crime Watch community in a typical Crime Watch community, only 5 to 7% of the residents were participating actively. Due to the growth and success of these programs, he felt this percentage was too low. Subsequently, he proposed a national program which would be coordinated by local crime prevention agencies and organizations, but that would involve entire communities at one time. The first National Night Out was introduced in early 1984, with the event culminating on the first Tuesday in August. That first year, 400 communities in 23 states participated in National Night Out. Nationwide, 2.5 million Americans took part in 1984. The seed had been planted. In subsequent years, participation has grown steadily. The 27th annual National Night Out this last August involved 37 million people in 15,110 communities in all 50 states, U.S. territories, Canadian cities, and military bases worldwide. National Night Out was on August 2nd. Reedley Night Out is in conjunction with that. It's still very hot here in August, and there are many cities and states that participate at different times during the year for heat and other reasons. While the traditional lights on the front porch vigils remain a part of National Night Out, activities have expanded considerably over the years to include block parties, cookouts, parades, visits from police, festivals, neighborhood walks, safety fairs, contests, rallies, and meetings. Here in Reedley, it is block parties, and as of today, and Chief Isaac and I were talking, it usually changes up to 5 o'clock on Thursday, the day of, but as of right now, we have 26 block parties planned, and I'm very, very excited about that. So I just have a flyer for you, and I'll get you all the locations. Usually it comes out Thursday afternoon is the last updated of locations, and we have a wonderful partnership with EMS and fire here in town who participate in this event with us as well. I also have for you the challenge coins. A few weeks ago, Leon Isaac from COPS and I gave a presentation to thank you for sending many of us from the police department to our trip to Washington, D.C., where Officer Javier Behar and Deputy Wallenmeyer were recognized this year. And so I actually have the coins for you now, so I would like to give you those.
Thank you. I think this is a really great program that we have to have that neighborhood, that night out, because it helps us to be aware of who our neighbors are and who's around us. Thank you. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening? Would you please state your name and address for a record, Valerie?
Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce, Valerie Peroni, 1633 11th Street. Thank you to Pastor O'Neill to bless our fiesta coming up next week. I'm here to remind you we've got it. Begins October 7th and 8th. And for those that are hanging around and have been begging for us to have the food vendors open Friday, for those that are working diligently hard at City Hall. I was kidding. The food vendors will be there at noon. And of course, if you'd like to go shopping, so if you grab your food quickly, you can go through the booths. We'll have over 70 booths over the weekend. Information booths, we'll have a few. I think right now we have no politicians this year. It's a quiet year. The diaper derby is on Friday. Mm-hmm. We have the crowning of the King and Queen on Friday night and the announcement of our Grand Marshal. I think Mayor Fass said that she would assist in doing those honors for us. We'll have some music that night. We're going to encourage people to dance out on the street. Saturday morning, we're going to step out with the 10K run. That community center is really busy. There is a pancake breakfast if you want to get up at 6 a.m. They're going to be serving with Kiwanis. After the parade, we'll have some activities in the actual park. And then we are also working with the roller derby girls to come out. And we're going to have some BMX. And we have the street pounders, I think they're called. They're cloggers that will also be coming out and doing. We've got the jail. We've got some really fun stuff. And I understand there's some people who are looking to do some dunk tanks. So if they're looking for any victims or volunteers, please let us know and we'll share that with them. Thank you.
I didn't give you a name. Thank you, Valerie.
I'm unavailable.
Are you going to be the first one on the docket for the dunk tank?
I get sick.
Oh. Is there any other public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on. The consent agenda. Items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would anyone like to remove an item from our consent agenda?
Remove item number 7.
Okay, anyone else? Would anyone from the public like to remove item 6? Or 8. Seeing none.
I'll make a motion to accept the other two.
Okay.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Chavez.
Yes.
Celino.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. Item 7 is approval of the First Amendment to operational agreement between the City of Reedley Police Department and the City of Orange Cove Police Department for training, temporary housing, and temporary communication services.
I'd like to ask Lieutenant Garza if he would just give us a little bit update of Orange Cove and how they're doing with the police department and how the community is accepting what's taking place in that city.
Well, actually, there is a member from the Orange Cove Police Department that's here representing Chief Steenport. But as far as the communication center, we are hopefully going to, well, I was just notified that the third full-time dispatcher is going to be completing training as of next week. So that we are well beyond where we are hoping to be. The communication center is coming around. They are still waiting on some contractor information in order to install the 911 system, but we've been assured that is going to be installed probably by January easily. And so they should be able to be effective up and running by January
1. All right.
Because I noticed that this ends on December 31st, and I was wondering, is that kind of the ending date, or
that we're hoping that is a hard date. Okay. Of course, there's always something that can come up, and professional courtesy won't allow us to really just cut ties completely. But we are hoping. We have been working really close with Orange Cove Police Department. Actually, some of their dispatchers are actually already dispatching from their dispatch center in Orange Cove. The only thing that they can't do is answer 911 phone calls.
Mm.
But that's what we're waiting on.
Oh, okay. So there's a connection that needs to be made.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions that you have as representative of the City of Orange Cove?
Council, Sergeant Rivera with the Orange Cove Police Department. I would just
I'd like to thank the City of Reedley and the Reedley Police Department for doing an outstanding job in supporting the Orange Cove Police Department. Okay.
Great. Thank you for your comment.
Move to approve item number 7.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item 9, a new business. Resolution number 2011-068, a resolution adopting the final budget of the City of Reedley for the fiscal year to July 1, 2011 to June 30th, 2012. Providing for the appropriation and expenditure of all sums set forth in said final budget, providing for the transfer and additional appropriations, and repealing all resolutions and parts of resolutions in conflict herewith. City Manager?
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the Council, Nicole Ziba, City Manager. I'm very proud to present to you my first budget with the City of Reedley. This late date for a budget that starts July 1st. But in fact, we are very happy, finance staff and I, to present this budget to you, to final this, to move forward into the next year. You'll notice items 9 and A, B, and C all go together as a package. 9 is the budget itself. Item A is the master salary table. Item B is the salary resolution, which establishes salary and benefits for the unrepresented groups. And item C is a resolution which fixes the employer's contribution for Medical and Hospital Care Act, and that is our CalPERS medical contribution. So I'd like to just briefly touch base on what is in this budget that differentiates it from the budget hearings you had back in May. In fact, this does include all of the labor agreements that the city has been diligently working on. It includes a 4% wage suspension for RPOA employees that became effective September 1st. It includes a 2% wage suspension and 40 hours of unpaid furlough time for GSU employees. And it includes, and this is part of the salary resolution, medical premium contribution for unrepresented employees, as well as 40 hours of unpaid furlough. Also eliminates the May vacation buyback. In addition to the labor and unrepresented salary and benefit concessions, we've eliminated and frozen certain positions. We've eliminated the HR manager and HR office budget. We've frozen several positions, assistant planner position, refuse system supervisor, etc. Our plan is to hold those frozen until such time as the budget starts to look better. This budget was not built using any Measure G funding. It's nice to know we have that as a tool in the toolkit, but this budget, as of right now, does not include any Measure G funding. It does include $200,000 of reserve. You will notice that we do end with a fund balance of approximately $50,000. The reserves, it is our hope to come back to this body with a mid-year budget revision where we can decrease the amount of reserves being used. At this time, the budget was built on the assumption that there will be no backfill of the lost VLF funds of $150,000. There is a lot of talk at the state level that we may receive those funds. If in fact we receive those funds, we have the $150,000 in VLF, we would have the fund balance of $50,000, meaning that we would not have to use the reserve funds. That's a big if, though, and we can't build a budget on ifs. So we don't, at this time, assume the backfill of those VLF. We did scour line items. We were able to reduce several line items. It does assume also a one-time revenue increase from PG&E, an audit that they conducted where they had been, they found that the city was shy of about $50,000 that it was owed, so it does include a one-time payment of $50,000 from PG&E. And again, we do use $200,000 of the reserves, which leaves us with unused reserves estimated at approximately $804,000 for the year. At this time, Council, I do want to mention that specifically the unrepresented group, I think it's important to call them out. They are taking a very courageous step, and they are starting to contribute to medical benefits. I want to call them out because they showed a lot of leadership and a lot of courage, and this is a hard step, and this was not something that was forced upon them. They stepped up to the leadership position, and so I just want to acknowledge them and the great work they did with us in talking with us and sitting down at the table and continuing to work with us. So that's where we are, Council, with the budget. It's going to be a tough year. As my budget memo calls out, we are not unique, and that's unfortunate. We are not a unique city. Cities up and down the state, cities nationwide, in fact, are suffering right now. Services are being cut. Fortunately for the city of Reedley, we've not had to cut into the bone, as I call it. We may be there next year. We're cutting the muscle. We've cut into the flesh, but we haven't yet cut the bone. So this year is going to be a hard year where we sit down and we look at all the core services we provide, and the goal will be that we don't have to cut bone. So if you have any specific questions, Lori Okun is here to respond. And we would need a separate and distinct motion for each of these four resolutions that are before you.
Thank you. Lori, do you have any other comments to add to City Manager's overview?
Good evening.
By the way, just a comment, mm-hmm. being from a finance background myself, I just want to, if any of you have had the opportunity, I believe this budget is on the website, and lots of graphs and neat ways of helping us understand what is happening and what has happened in the past are a part of our budget document. And I'd like to thank Lori for, at least in the last 4 years since I've been on the council, really making an effort to make it understandable by the common people. And she's done that and yet included all of the detail that needs to be done in the back sections. So hats off to you.
Thank you.
It was a lot of work.
Lori Okun, Finance Director. Just a quick notation. Once we have the adopted document, we will incorporate the master salary table along with the additional resolutions as part of the document. It is a document in motion, so we will have a mid-year budget review after December books are closed out. So sometime during January, all the department heads will be diligently watching their expenditures, and it's going to be a tough year, but we will bring forth all of the necessary monthly expenditure reports to monitor everything very closely.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the council?
Well, the budget line? You know, it was interesting to take a few days and just go page by page and looking at the expenditure detail, how many areas that compared from 2011 to 12 is how we reduce quite a bit of those areas. The only thing that really raises is just the benefit items. But it's going to be a tight year. It's not exactly what I was looking for, but we've had a lot of meetings trying to fix this budget, and we just have to tighten our belts, and hopefully we come back next year.
Any other comments from the council? Are there any questions or concerns, comments from the public on the budget? Or any of the other resolutions that are incorporated in this section? Item A, regarding the master salary table. Item B, regarding the salary and benefit schedule for management, confidential and professional technical employees. Or item C, the resolution fixing the employer's contribution under the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. Any comments, questions?
You want us to take each one separate?
Yeah, each one, and I believe you have three?
Four.
Three. Four. There's four resolutions, four. But I think there's three new ones that were provided after the packet with some slight modifications, so...
Okay, just can we get some clarification on those?
Yeah, just to be clear, so on the first one, resolution 2011-068, okay. The change from the one that's in your packet is the There's a new paragraph number 4 on the second page. That should have been one that was up on the dais beforehand. Basically giving the city manager authority under the authority that's provided under the municipal code. That was left out of the first resolution, so that's my fault. I added that in. Paragraph 4 is that the only change on that. Well, paragraph 4, and then there was a reference to the city manager as a he in paragraph 3, so I changed that to she.
Appreciate that.
And then on the master salary schedule, you also received one of those today. The reason you received that at this late date with a revision, the revision is actually number 3, where it defines reportable compensation. And in fact, we received notification from CalPERS that they expected all agencies to include language that defines reportable compensation and excludes certain compensation from pensionability. And none of our groups are impacted by this language at this time. However, CalPERS requires us to include this language in a council-approved salary resolution or master salary table. So we did go ahead and add that in. Rather than bringing it back to you at another date, we went ahead and just made the revision for tonight. And again, our groups are not currently impacted by these provisions in CalPERS.
So that city manager was just referring to new resolution 2011-070. Mm-hmm. And I think the new sections there were 2 and 3. Is that right, Lori?
Yes.
Sections 2 and 3 there. Reference to biweekly pay and then the reportable compensation required by CalPERS. That's the new language from the version that's in your packet. And then the last resolution in that that's modified is resolution 2011-071. Just a slight change on the second page. Under mid-management, under section 3.1b, the change about the middle of that, the listing of those mid-management positions about the middle of the way down, the old resolution states waste system superintendent. The actual job title is waste management superintendent. So the change is to waste management superintendent, just to clarify. And there was no change to resolution 2011-072. Okay. So we would ask that the motions for 6-8, 7-0, and 7-1 include the revised resolutions that you've received.
I'll go ahead and make the motion on resolution 2011-068 with the changes, with the stated changes.
I'll second it.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item A, the resolution number 2011-070, a resolution adopting a master salary table for all employees of the City of Reedley.
I'll make a motion for resolution number 2011-070 with the changes.
There a second?
A second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item B, resolution number 2011-071, a resolution establishing a revised salary and benefit schedule for the management confidential and professional technical employees, aka the unrepresented group. Yeah, hear a motion with the change of the waste management superintendent.
I'll make a motion for number 2011-071 with a different change in title.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item C, the resolution number 2011-072, a resolution fixing the employer's contribution under the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. May I have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you, Council. Congratulations on your budget adoption.
Item 10 is a workshop, a sewer rate workshop, and I'll turn it over to our Public Works, Mr. Robertson.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. Russ Robertson, Public Works Manager. The purpose of the sewer workshop this evening is to provide information to council and the public regarding the current status of the sewer enterprise fund, as well as to discuss sewer rate options. If I may, I'd like to first provide a quick overview of kind of where we're at and how we got there. If I can get this to cooperate. There we go. In 2007, the wastewater treatment plant was expanded from 3 million gallons per day to 5 million gallons per day. The major funding, The major funding mechanism of this expansion was a $26.9 million SRF loan that was obtained in 2007. Other debts that we have in the sewer enterprise fund are in 2001, a $1.7 million bond, which was taken out. Also, my understanding is for repairs and upgrades to the wastewater treatment plant. And then in 2007, an additional $4.1 million were obtained through a bond to complete the wastewater expansion project. That brings our total debt in the sewer enterprise fund at this point to $32.8 million. The annual payment on that debt is $2.1 million. This is slow and changing, apologize. In 2007, also when the SRF loan was obtained, a sewer rate study was completed. That sewer rate study recommended the following increases in order to meet the debt obligation. In fiscal year 2007-2008, a 7% increase was recommended, and then to follow a 2008-2009 7%, in 2009-2010 7%, and finally in 2010-2011 10%. The initial increase of 7% in 2007 was followed through with, however, the remainder of the increases were not. And this placed the sewer enterprise fund currently in financial distress. So in a nutshell, if rates are not upwardly adjusted, the city will be unable to meet the annual debt service requirement from our debt obligations. Recently, a draft sewer rate study was completed by HDR Engineering. We have a representative from HDR Engineering here with us this evening. And I would ask Mr. Sean Korn to come forward. He is going to present an overview of the sewer rate study to council, as well as discuss sewer rate options for council's consideration.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for having me back after all the fun we had on the water side. As Russ said, we're going to walk through the sewer rate study. I've got a brief overview, and we'll talk a little bit about the key inputs, some of the key drivers of the sewer rate study, and then really focus in on the rate designs when we start talking about how we want to possibly restructure future rates going forward for primarily the commercial rate customers. There we go. So I'll start with an overview of the rate setting process. I thought about giving a quick pop quiz based on the water stuff, but Russ said I didn't have enough time for that, so we'll kind of walk through that process again real briefly for you. We'll talk about the two key components of this and then really focus on the rate alternatives and talk about the next steps going forward to implement the rates. A comprehensive rate study is based on three components, and these work in consecutive order: a revenue requirement, a cost of service, and a rate design. The revenue requirement tells us how much money is needed to prudently operate the sewer utility. What do the rates need to look like over an extended time period? The cost of service then takes those revenue requirements or the expenses of the utility and allocates them equitably to the different customer classes of service. So it takes those costs that the city incurs for the sewer utility, and we don't track those based on today I worked on a residential home line. Tomorrow I'll work on a commercial customer's line. So we need to have a method to come back and allocate those costs equitably between the different customers based on how they utilize the system. And that's essentially what our cost of service study does. Once we know the answers from the revenue requirement and the cost of service, so any overall rate adjustment that we need, and how the classes are playing with each other, then we can develop rates to collect those target revenues. So right now we've completed all of the first two boxes, revenue requirement and cost of service, and we've designed rates for your information tonight and eventual direction to us to complete the study. When we develop the analysis, there's two key components. The first one is the O&M expenses, and that's the top box you see here on this slide. And when we develop our revenue requirement, it includes four key O&M components. The typical O&M expenses, labor, benefits, materials and supplies, etc., any taxes or transfer payments, debt service, which Russ just talked about, and then capital projects funded from rates. And if you remember from our prior discussions, that bottom one, the capital projects funded from rates, is a key component to utility financing. That's the annual amount of rate-funded capital that's put back into the system. So you can think of it as depreciation. We want to make sure that we're replacing those sewer lines as they're depleting and make sure that we have adequate funds annually for that. We take that total revenue requirement, subtract out miscellaneous revenues, and then that tells us what adjustment we need to make to rates. Now you see a couple lines coming from the bottom box up to the top box. So that's the capital funding scenario. So we take the total capital projects in any given year, back out any outside funding, any revenue bonds or loans, grants, customer contributions, in your case, the developer impact fees, and that tells us how much we need to collect from rates, that difference between those. And that's the target that we try and hit is with depreciation on an annual basis. Now, if we issue bonds or loans, obviously we've got an annual debt service payment that comes back up into the top box. So that's where we try and balance things out over a five-year period to see what's the best mix of funding for these capital projects going forward. Some of the key issues that we faced as we went through this rate study process is the city's required to have a reserve fund set aside for that SRF loan. And so that needs to be funded over the next four-year period to get 10% of that loan put away in a reserve fund that'll be eventually used for the final payment of that loan. So the last payment kind of disappears off the books because you have that money put away today, but that is a requirement of that loan. The other key component was making sure you have adequate funds to pay the annual debt service obligation. So we want to make sure that we can repay that debt since you borrowed it. That's one of the things when they loaned it to you, they checked to make sure you could. Now, one of the complicating factors with this is the negative growth that you've experienced here. You've had no significant diffs coming in the door because in this economic time, we're not seeing growth anywhere. A lot of utilities are seeing no growth and people leaving town. And so that's a problem because there's a portion of those fees that are there to pay annual debt service for the expansion component of the plant. So that also played into the overall analysis that we looked at. When you issue debt, there are certain legal requirements that you have to abide by. We call those debt service coverage ratios as one example. And we need to make sure that we maintain those coverage ratios. We want to make sure that we provide adequate funding on an annual basis for those renewals and replacements. Ultimately, at the end of this study, we want to make sure that we have equitable and cost-based rates. That's the bottom line that we want to have. That's the thing that's looked at when your rates are reviewed. Now, the other part of this, as Russ touched on, is deferral of past rate adjustments. If you take the two 7% and the 10%, just with simple math, we're at 24%. So that's a difference of several million dollars or $1 million as we go through this analysis. So lots of numbers on this next slide, but this is the summary of the revenue requirement. I'm just going to take a look at 2011. And what we did is we took the budget in 2011 and we escalated it out over the five-year time period of 2012 to 16. So in 2011, there was $3 million of rate revenues, another roughly $100,000 of miscellaneous revenue. So in total for the sewer utility, there was $3.1 million coming in the door to pay the bills. That $3.1 million was then used to fund the applications of funds. So we had total O&M expenses of $2.1 million. Transfers, that line is that transfer to that SRF reserve fund. That's the annual transfer, and you'll see it's totally funded in 2014, fiscal year 2014. We have no CIP from rates, our depreciation funding in 11. We start ramping that in starting in 2012. Then we also have debt service in there. And the key thing I want to focus in on the debt service is that in order to make the numbers work to the level they are now, is in 2012 and 2013, we are using a significant amount of DIF funds to pay that annual debt service to minimize the overall rate impact in those years. So we have total debt service in 2012 of $2.2 million. We take out $1.1 million from DIFs, so we're left with $1,095,000 in annual debt service payments. So total in 2011, we have revenues of $3.1 million, expenses of $3.4 million. We're $300,000 short, which is roughly a 10%. You take the $300,000 divided by the $3 million in rate revenues. Now, going out over time for expenses, we inflated those based on assumed inflationary measures, and revenues were assumed to grow at 1% a year based on assumed growth going forward. So the bottom line, the double barred line below the red box, shows the proposed rate adjustments in 2012 through 2016. And you'll notice in 2012, the first one is a 25% adjustment, followed by another 25% adjustment in 2013, and thereafter is essentially inflationary adjustments. Now, when you look at that, the issue that we faced was not having any reserves available to minimize that anymore. The reserves we used from the DIF funds and other available reserves are not enough to reduce that overall percentage adjustment in 2012 and 2013. The bottom line is our debt service coverage ratios, and you'll see after the rate adjustment, they're very strong. The good part is with the SRF loans, there aren't those specific bond covenant requirements. But at the same time, we want to make sure that when we look at those the total outstanding debt, that we are covering those annual payments. So the deficiencies that you see on that page are primarily driven by the need to fund the SRF loan reserve, maintaining and being able to pay annual debt service payments, and then really impacted by the lack of growth. There's a portion, as I said, of those fees that we're paying for growth annually, and without growth, it minimizes the ability to fund those with those fees. So rates ultimately need to pick up that component of that cost in the short term. As I talked about, there's a lack of flexibility in being able to defer those first 2 years' adjustments, just given the overall need for revenues to fund those annual debt service payments. There's not sufficient reserves available to phase this in, essentially, over time. Those proposed adjustments, the first two primarily, will provide the adequate funding for the operating and capital needs of the sewer utility. Those last 3 years we've assumed are inflationary, and what we've talked about is as we set up the Prop 218 notice, those will be noted as to what our limits are as maximum and minimum changes, and will ultimately be set each year during the budgeting process. So if you take a look at the typical residential customer, currently their monthly rate is $28.86 a month. If you simply apply the 25%, that would increase the rate from $28.86 to $36.08, a $7.22 change, a $9.02 increase in 2013, and roughly just over a dollar for the inflationary increases going out. So once those inflation, after those first two 25, then those would be reset each year based on inflation. Now, one thing I do want to note here is, depending on the timing of when the ultimate sewer rate is implemented, can play a part in what that final number, in this case $36.08, is going to look like. Because if we do implement this, the further out we implement this into next year, the less time we have to collect those funds. And we have to make an adjustment to what that rate looks like in that initial year to make sure that there's adequate funds to pay that debt service for the SRF loan. Cost of service, which is the next slide. As I talked about, it's a method to equitably allocate the cost between the various customer classes of service. It's based on each customer class as a whole. So we combine all the residential, all the duplex, triplex, all the commercial into their own little pockets. And we allocate costs based on their typical or the average customer characteristics for each class. The cost of service did show that there were some cost differences out there. However, at this point in time, I would not recommend that we make any cost of service adjustments for several reasons. One, it's the first comprehensive cost of service study you've done on the sewer side. And to me, that's one data point on our chart. And as you go through time and look at these every so often, 5-10 years, when you do this process, you're going to start getting more data points on that chart, and you'll be able to see a trend. And at that point, then you start making some adjustments. The other key driver here is, as I talked about, wastewater volumes are a big player in developing this cost of service study. And we're basing those wastewater volumes on current metered water consumption. So since we just put meters in on the system, people are still reacting to how they're using water. So over time, as people become used to being used to paying a metered water rate, it's going to have an impact on the sewer side because consumption patterns will change over time. So as those consumption patterns change, that's going to change the results of the cost of service, because that's a big key driver in how we allocate costs. So at this point, we're basing it on roughly 12 months of what I'll call good data. I would not recommend that we make these adjustments at this time. The other part is, when we start making cost of service adjustments, we're starting to play with two key points here. We're already looking at adjusting rates, and then if we start making interclass adjustments, it just compounds those rate adjustments. And so given the need to adequately fund the utility, I would also not recommend that we change that. So some of the rate structure alternatives we'll talk about will actually allow possibly some tweaks in this cost of service as you move forward. And I'll talk about those when we get to the rate design here. So at this point, I'll talk about the current rate structure, talk about the pros and cons of that, how that looks. We did develop several alternatives, three as a matter of fact, alternatives for the commercial customers. For the residential, duplex, triplex, and unmetered customer, they currently pay a flat monthly rate. Doesn't matter how much water they use. We're not proposing to change that. We want to leave that as is for this point, and I'll talk about why in a slide here in a minute. But for the customers that are currently being billed a consumption charge, we put together a couple options. One is to leave it how it is today. Two is to take what you have today and add a fixed charge to it. Three is to add a fixed charge and then only bill on winter water use. And I'll talk about how that impacts things on the sewer side here in a minute. We did develop rates for the next 3-year period, so the first two 25% rate adjustments and then the first 2.5%. And we're talking about implementation sometime in February of 2012. And again, the timing of that implementation plays a part in what that ultimate first year rate will be for these customers. So as I talked about, for the current rate structure, the top half is the flat rate customers, residential, duplex, triplex, and unmetered customers. It's a flat rate each month, doesn't change. For the metered customers, for commercial, I'll call them, which is multifamily, all other commercial, hospitals, and schools, there's no base rate. It's 100% consumption based on the amount of water they use. So it's $3.45 per 1,000 gallons with a minimum bill of $26.46. Industrial, same structure, slightly different consumption charge of $3.37, but still a minimum charge. So the flat rate for residential and unmetered customers, very common. It's pretty typical out there when you go around and look at different sewer rates for different utilities. However, I will say for those metered, quote, residential customers, your duplex, triplex, and single-family homes, the trend is moving towards volumetric billing. It's essentially trying to send a price and conservation signal on the sewer side as well as on the water side. So if your sewer bill is based on how much water you use and your water bill is based on how much water you use, if you reduce your water, you can reduce both your water and sewer bill. So the problem, again, recent meter implementation, I wouldn't move this way now. I would definitely wait a couple of years, if not several years, to make sure that everybody has a good handle on their consumption and how they're going to use water. The volumetric-based billing for all of your other customers is very common. However, there are some drawbacks to the current method. One is there's no monthly fixed charge. So that makes the revenue stream fairly volatile, depending on if it's a warm summer, cool summer, you get a little more rain than usual. That can impact the water consumption, which also impacts the sewer utility. So adding some level of a fixed charge would actually provide some additional revenue stability to the sewer utility. When you start looking at costs for the sewer utility, I'd venture a guess, I haven't looked at it, but it's roughly 90 to 95% of those costs we would consider fixed from an accounting perspective. We know we got to pay staff. We know we got to pay the debt service. There's some chemicals, some pumping, different things like that. Those are your minor variable costs that are out there. So having some fixed component in that rate structure really does tie back to how you incur costs for the utility. The other issue with billing on all water consumption is the impact of billing during the summer. When you have heavy irrigators, they're just dumping it out on the ground, on the ball fields, etc., then that water is not coming back into the sewer system as long as they're doing their irrigation correctly. It's going to stay on the field, the grass is going to grow, etc. So in the summer, they could have very significant bills because you're billing on all water consumption. And so when you start talking about the different options we have on this chart on the next page, right now you currently bill under that blue line. So in the wintertime, the use is low. It slowly creeps up to the summer to that peak in August, September timeframe, and then it starts coming back down for winter use. Right now, that customer's bill is significantly higher in the summer. Under the winter water average approach, what we do is we take a look at each individual customer. So each customer is going to have their own rate. And each customer's winter water average will be based on their billing of November, December, January, February time period. And we'll take the average, and in this case, the average is, I think, roughly 7. So in those summertime periods, those sewer customers are only going to be billed up to 7,000 gallons a month, regardless of if their summertime use is 20,000 gallons, because we're assuming that that wintertime use reflects the water use that's indoor, essentially, and is coming back down the pipe to the treatment plant. So this is kind of the next best method of tying it to what's really impacting the sewer treatment plant. So this would vary for each customer on your system that would be billed under this method. And so there would be some adjustments. Now, in the winter months, if they use less than that average, they're only billed up to what they actually use. So it's what they use as long as it's less than that winter average. So here's a quick look at the proposed flat rate structure on the next slide. And this is for, I'll talk about the residential customers. And you can see in year one that rate is $39.15, which does not tie to the previous slide that showed the 25% increase. And the reason for that is we're increasing the revenues received by the utility by 25%. But if we're billing it in 9 or 10 months, we need to increase that rate to account for those months where we're not billing it. So that's why that number's higher than it is on the prior page. In year two, it assumes the 25% increase in rate revenues to collect that same amount. So that, again, that number's slightly different. And that's the difference from rate compounding over time. So if we're a little bit higher in the rate in year one, over time, it'll be the same over a several year period. duplex and triplex and unmetered commercial are billed similarly under those same assumptions. So the alternatives for the commercial customers. Option one is the status quo. And you can see there's no base charge, but we increase the, in year one, all water consumption right in the middle of the page on the left-hand side goes to $4.54, then up to $5.40, then up to $5.54 per 1,000 gallons. That's the way you bill today. That would be the same thing you do right now with the rate adjustments applied. Option two, you can see that consumption charge in year one drops from $4.54 to $3.28. The reason that that rate drops is because we've implemented a monthly fixed charge based on the size of the customer's water meter. So we're essentially trying to tie back to the impacts they're going to place on the system from both a water and sewer perspective. I will say that internally with staff, we went round and round on what that fixed charge should be. Should it be $2? Should it be $5? Should it be $25? And we settled on the $15 because it seemed to minimize the impact to most customers. Because if you think about it, when you look at a low-use water customer, the higher that fixed charge is, the greater dollar impact it's going to be on those customers. For a large water user, a higher fixed charge doesn't make that big of an impact on their overall bill because it's a smaller component if they have lots of consumption. So the $15 seemed to minimize the impacts to the majority of the customers. Option three, we are developing this winter water average. And what we've done is we've applied a 125% adder to the winter water. So we're going to take your winter water use and add another 25 oops factor on top of that, just as people are starting to get used to this. And you can see we've implemented the same $15 a month charge, and that changes with the meter size. But then that consumption charge has increased now. If you drop down a line from where the other consumption charge is on the right-hand side, you'll see that it goes to $4.85, which is higher than the option one or option two. The reason that that number increases is because we are billing less water. If you remember, we're drawing a line through their consumption pattern, then we're missing that whole middle part of that chart, and we're not billing on it. Whereas under option one and two, we're billing for all that water. Under this option, we're cutting out a lot of water and basing it just on their winter water average. So by default, if the fixed charge stays the same, then that consumption charge needs to increase to target the same revenues. And I should make that point that all three of these options will generate the same amount of revenue in each of the years up here. Now, the other thing is on option two and option three, where we've added the fixed charge, there's an option here in this chart, I don't include it, the minimum bill. But you can still incorporate the minimum bill component into that rate structure. Generally, when you have a fixed charge, it's set at a level such that it covers those minimum service availability charges. And that's what we tried to do here as well. Industrial only had two options, status quo, which is no fixed charge and a consumption charge, and then option two, which is adding that meter charge or fixed charge to it along with a consumption charge. In this case, the industrial fixed charge is slightly greater than the other commercial customers. That's primarily given the size of the industrial customers, the strength of wastewater that's coming down the pipe from these customers is different than the typical commercial customer, and we need to account for that. So here on the next page is a chart of the residential, duplex, triplex, and unmetered commercial bill comparisons for the next 3 years. Kind of stair steps up, obviously, and this is based on implementation in February of 2012 and what those rates will look like. Somewhat self-explanatory here over the next three-year period. this is where it gets a little interesting, and unfortunately this isn't showing up great. As we were developing the proposed rate alternatives, the status quo, option one, and option two, we started noticing a trend as we went through this. And the trend was that given the way you bill today under the status quo or option two, those small customers or those small customers and customers with minimal outdoor irrigation needs were impacted differently than the customers that had larger customers that also had greater outdoor needs. And so on this chart, I believe it's a dark blue on the left-hand side, is the status quo bill. The one you can barely see on the screen is option one, which is the middle bar. And then the purple color is option two, which is the winter water average. So in this case, this customer bill, and now that I'm looking at a line chart, would have been much better and easier to read. Option two is that winter water average. And you can see under that option, because this is a smaller customer and no significant outdoor water needs, they're fairly impacted under either option two or option one or option two, where we've added the fixed charge because it is a smaller use customer. Now on the next chart, this is a medium-sized customer with average outdoor needs. And the status quo is the first bar. The blue bar is the status quo plus a fixed charge. And the green bar is the option two, which is the winter water average billing. Under this option, it's interesting to note that as you look at their usage, in general, the status quo is the highest, followed by the winter water average. And the reason for that is this customer does not have a significant amount of outdoor use, and that fixed charge is bumping up that stat. The fixed charge is decreasing the consumption component, so that option one is actually dropping given their use. It's not a significant portion of their bill. Where this really shows up on this winter water average is on a large customer with significant outdoor water use. And you'll see on this chart, the light blue, it looks white here on the screen here, is the status quo, where in the winter they don't have much water use, so they've got a fairly low bill in terms of their overall annual bill, still roughly $500, $600 a month. When they get into the summer months, you'll see the status quo option and option one start climbing up pretty significantly. That's that curve we were talking about, where the more you use in the summer for outdoor watering, the higher that sewer bill goes. Now, if we were to bill under the winter water average, that's the small, darker blue box on the right-hand side of each month. So you'll see the difference in this customer's example is in September, they would have a $6,000 bill under the current option, under the current status quo rate. Under the winter water average, their bill would be roughly $500 or $600. So that's a pretty significant change for a large irrigation type customer. Now that's the shift that's going on as part of this change in these rate structure alternatives. Currently, there's a lot of revenues, rate revenues, that come in the door in the summertime period from customers like this one where they have a high outdoor irrigation need. If you switch to a winter water average basis, it would start what I call as a waterbed approach. You start pushing down on one side, the other side starts coming up. So those other customers are going to start coming up in their rates as those heavy outdoor irrigators start coming down in their rates. Under the status quo option or option one with the all consumption bill plus a fixed charge, you're going to have the similar experience where some of those shifts are going on as well. So we've got some unique little challenges as part of the proposed rate structure going forward. Each of these alternatives somewhat meets a slightly different goal, and that's why we wanted to present these to you all tonight so you could think about them for a couple days, weeks, maybe, to get a handle on how these impact everybody. but they do change some of the inter-class issues that are going on based on different billing processes, and they will have a different impact on different customers depending on if they're a small or large customer and if they have significant outdoor watering needs. Again, all three options generate essentially the same amount of dollars, not to the penny, but pretty close to the same exact number each year. And those winter water rate structures do start shifting the cost the greatest. When you just add the fixed charge to what you have today, that doesn't have as a significant impact on customers as does the winter water averaging. Adding the fixed charge actually impacts the smaller size customers from a percentage basis and dollar basis greater than some of your larger customers because it's a bigger component of that overall monthly bill. That's where they'll see the change. So moving forward, we would like some direction in the future on which rate option you all liked the best or which one you'd like to proceed with at this point for the Prop 218, because that is the next step. You would have to hold a public hearing. We would then send out a rate notice, which would say here's the rates for the different customers that are out there for the next several year period. There'd be a 45-day period, and then you'd have to collect any protests, then you'd have a final public hearing, protest hearing, after that 45-day period, and then ultimately adoption at some point in the future. As I said, as we start moving this farther and farther out, the less amount of time we have to collect the revenues that are needed to pay those debt services, the debt service payments that are coming due towards the middle end of next year. So the farther this gets pushed out, then that's going to raise that dollar amount. You could see the difference just assuming a February implementation versus a beginning of the fiscal year implementation. It starts ratcheting that up in that first year. And that's all driven by the lack of existing funds to pay that debt service at this point and no reserves as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to the council for any questions you may have of me. And I realize this is a whole lot of information here rather quickly.
Yeah, that was one of my questions was, was it possible to get us this information before the meeting? I mean, there's a lot of information to digest here. And
absolutely, and that's why unless you all felt comfortable, we weren't asking for any direction from you tonight. If you felt comfortable, we'd take it. Really, where we're at in the study is we've got those first two boxes complete, which were the revenue requirement and cost of service. I have the report written, and I've just got holding places for those rate structures for whatever we use going forward. So that's really the next step of our rate study process, is to decide what we need to take forward for the proposed rate structures, and then go through the Prop 218 process. And we need that report out there as we go through that 45-day notice so that folks can jump online and read it, or look at it at least.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to refer back to 2007. Proposition 218 notice to the public hearing was sent to residents providing notification of proposed sewer rate increases. However, the notice inadvertently only included a one-time 7% increase plus the consumer price index rate, and it said staff. Let me finish it, Aaron. Staff report for that resolution stated that the additional rate increases was previously projected would not be necessary, and this was incorrect. Now, if we had been given the right information, how much difference would we be seeing today?
Guesstimating here a little bit, but based on 2 sevens and a 10 compounded, that's more than 25%. So essentially, you would have been covering costs and being able to accumulate adequate reserves for that SRF fund loan reserve that you need, and also establishing additional reserves to be able to transition or phase in rates over time. I would guess we're looking at roughly, a 60% over the five-year period right now with the 225s and a couple 2.5s, I would say you would knock that down by at least 25% at the very least. And so you would be able to transition rates in much more smoothly, much more palatable levels. You could probably split it up over a 3 or 4 year period and have something less than a double digit increase, more likely.
How much projected growth do we have in here that we didn't get that has caused this to spike like this?
That I'm not sure. I believe the old studies, Russ, you want to?
The 2007 sewer rate study projected a 3% growth. We came in at, I think, 1.3, looking at the city planner. I think it's about 1.3, so we did miss our projections with that.
And we're assuming 1% going forward.
1% growth going
1% forward? 1% growth over this five-year period.
I don't know if we're going to reach that even.
That we took a very conservative approach with the 1%, and given what we know from what our planning department has, I think 1% is probably appropriate.
Any growth will help minimize this going forward, I will say that. It's going to reduce the need for rates to pay for a major portion of the SRF loan that's related to growth. So it will could reduce that going out in the future.
I know we have a lot of foreclosures in this town, and you know, we got to fill those first, I would imagine, before we start looking at adding more new developments and stuff. I wasn't here in 2007. I was kind of listening to see why we didn't do this gradually as opposed to all at once here.
And I wasn't either, unfortunately. So
we weren't given the information. That's the problem.
Well, I would like to see some comparisons of, you know, a couple of residences, a couple of bigger businesses. I know the school district has come and requested a change in their sewer rate, as I recall. And I believe we changed to the winter rate for them.
We haven't at this point, but that's okay. Why out of the options given tonight, staff is recommending option 3, which has the average winter water usage element to it. After our research, we feel that that's the most fair and equitable option. So that's just our recommendation. But we will wait on council to give us further direction. Also, a memo was included in your council packet that was written by a former city manager regarding what he felt was a decision to not move forward with rates as recommended in the sewer rate study of 2007.
So again, Council, this is a workshop setting so that you do have time to just digest. Russ will come back to you in another 2 weeks, and we'll go further into your desires for which of those options you'd like to pursue. And from that point, we can, unless you know right now which one you want, which I'm assuming you need some time, and then we'll go from there into the Proposition 218 process. So.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the council? Are there any comments or questions, concerns from the public on this issue?
Let me ask one more question to staff. What kind of notices are we going to be giving, and how often, to the public on these increases so they understand what's taking place? We have a debt to meet, and that's why these increases have to be met. And there's going to be some concerns from the public, because these things are going to jump quite a bit.
Yes, there will. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I was looking at here, I'd like to make sure that they have enough notice so they can digest what's taking place. And what was interesting here, if written protests against the proposed increase, water treatment rates are presented and then not withdrawn by a majority of the recorded owners of the parcels that would be subjected to the increase in water rates, the city may not impose the increase in the rates.
Mm-hmm. That's a Proposition 218 issue.
Right.
Correct. And what that means is that we are in fiscal emergency at that state. So you're right, it does come down to the communications plan and the outreach.
Right.
On that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is item number 11, is our council reports. And I'll start with Councilman Chavez.
I've only got one thing to report on the 22nd. Got invited to Grant Middle School to judge a talent contest. And it's pretty neat experience. You know, we had the kids get up on stage and perform, and they did a really good job, some of them, you know, and it was really tough to judge, and it actually was pretty good experience for me, so I enjoyed that. That's all I have.
Well, I'd like to apologize for not making the meeting to the Columbia project that took place, but by reading the exponent information, the county doesn't have money to include into this project, so I guess they're looking for landowners to directly just donate the property. So it's going to be interesting. That's all I have.
Okay. Councilman,
there was two landlords that were there that said they were willing to donate their property, which was nice to help out. It was Mr. Zimmerman was there, and I'm trying to think of Maria's last name. There was another homeowner. What was it?
Cervantes,
huh? Uh-huh, that said they were willing to do that. So, and that had to be the first thing that we needed to do, huh? In order to get started, to apply for grants, PG&E was present.
Yeah, basically, the way the county wanted to approach this effort was to make sure that the property owners, I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce myself, city engineer, Noe Martinez. And what they wanted to do is first gauge the interests of the affected property owners out there to see if they would be willing to dedicate their property for right-of-way purposes, because otherwise, like Councilman Solano said, they have no money to move forward in this project. And what their goal is, if we get the property owners to dedicate the land, the plan would then be for them to provide in-kind service or work to do the improvements, and we would chime in as much as we could as far as either in-kind service ourselves or looking for other funding opportunities. So that's the first step we wanted to take, is let's see what the property owners have to say about dedicating, because according to the county, it would be really difficult for them to move forward on this proposed project if we didn't get the property dedicated at no cost. Mm-hmm. So from what we got, and as Council Member Metnicker said, it seems like the property owners would be willing to dedicate. So at this point, we're currently following up with the property owners that didn't show up and see if they would be on the same page as far as the rest, and we could take it from there.
So the side that we're looking for property dedication is actually on the county side.
It's on both sides, city and county.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that Maria Cervantes, she's on the city side. Then Mr. Zimmerman is on the county side.
Okay.
We had one of the property owners on the city side that was missing at the meeting, and then another one from the county side, and a third property owner that was missing, but they had representation from their granddaughter here, and they mentioned that they thought the couple was going to be willing to dedicate. So. So that's where we're at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Noe.
Then I also went to the Boys and Girls Club. to the Boys and Girls Club ribbon cutting with the chamber, and it was a good turnout. It was really nice. There was a lot of kids and a lot of senior citizens, and there was food giveaway and games, and I guess they partner with Kaiser, and it was just a really nice time for the kids. It was really nice.
So Kaiser gave them some grants.
Some grant funding, mm-hmm, for that.
Cool.
It was real nice. And then I went, I took your place today at Sierra View Hospital, Sierra View Homes, and they had their ribbon cutting today for their memory center, mm-hmm, their memory. And it was also very nice. I went through, mm-hmm, got a tour of it, and it was very, very nice. It's something we needed here in our community, and it's good that they've been able to provide that service for us. I'm looking forward to the apartments being, mm-hmm, finished up. So, and then I also wanted to thank Russ. I guess that they're doing some of the sidewalks around town. They're so bad, some of them. And we walked that one that they were. We've walked that one before, and it's good that you've taken care of that, because there's so many that we could accidents that could happen if people don't really watch where they're. It's almost like climbing a mountain, some of them. Honest. So, but it's good to see that we're doing it, even if it's little by little, we're getting it done. So, thank you for that. That's it.
Okay. I had a couple of things. The city manager and I were invited to the State of the County breakfast by Donald Ikamiya, one of our prior councilmen. And that was an interesting morning. Fresno County Supervisor Phil Larson was the keynote speaker, and he shared about what was going on in the county and was just really inspirational, I thought, for our year going forward. They also showed a video and showed each of the districts representing all of the Board of Supervisors, and that was well done that evening, or that morning. Also went to the Taste of the Town, and thank you, Don, to your team, Barbie Shakespeare and the Downtown Association, for putting that on. I think this year's was the best, at least that I've been to.
And I
think the reason was the weather, number one. And it seemed like we had more vendors this year. Usually I almost got to everybody, but I didn't get even close this year. So a lot of good food, a lot of fun interaction with people. And our new city manager came and brought her family and a whole troop with her. So that was a special evening, and we had some good music too. So thank you for that. Also spent, the reason I'm sick, is this last week spent a few days in Washington, D.C., where it rained and was very muggy and hot, and with our chief and one of our other officers, with MCC with Sherry Wiedenhofer, and we were speaking regarding the justice programs that we're going to be kicking off and that we've been working on for the last couple of years, and working with reconciliation and kind of social justice rather than punitive justice systems. So I've asked our chief to, we'll put together some information, and we'll have a meeting to share on that probably at our next council meeting. And that's all that I have. City manager.
Well, I've learned that in Reedley there are a lot of community things, and most of them revolve around food. So I was able to be a judge with Chief Isaac in the Elks rib cook-off, and that was very exciting. And I'll tell you, after 20 potato salads, I don't think I want a potato salad again. But it was a blast. This week we had a very important ceremony here at City Hall, and that was a swearing-in ceremony for three new police officers. And as I mentioned in that ceremony, that it's a very emotional time for public administrators, because these are people who are stepping into a role, taking on a challenge, law enforcement is a challenge none of us will, well, except Mr. Chavez, obviously, as an investigator, but none of us will have to know what it's like to strap on a gun to go to work. And so these three young gentlemen are stepping into the role. I understand this is a tough week for them. They're in training. So very exciting time for Reedley with these three new officers. I do want to point out that we did hit our deadline date for applications for District 3 candidates. We have five candidates. There's a memo in your box that you'll have on the process going forward. We have our citizens committee that we expect will be interviewing the top five or the five candidates and paring down to the top three candidates. That will occur next week. And we also gave you a timeline for how we're going to brief and orient those candidates moving forward. We would like to bring the top three candidates to you in a special meeting of the council so that you're not forced to listen to candidates, question candidates, decide and appoint in the same evening. That's a lot of information to take in. So Sylvia will be calling you to talk to you about holding a special meeting the day before the council meeting on the 11th so that we have time to fully vet the candidates before having you select. So that memo is in your box. And in October, we will provide a briefing to this body on the Central Valley Transportation Center. That center is moving forward. It's an exciting project. Staff did meet with Mr. Chavez as a representative on the JPA to talk about where the project is headed. Given the funding constraints that the city has, the school district has, et cetera, a different position than we were in 7 years ago when the project got started. We're all still very excited about the project, but it's moving in a slightly different direction, and the school district is acknowledging it probably needs to move in a different direction. So we'd like to bring a briefing to you in October just so that this body is fully aware of where we are in that project. And Mr. Rapata was instrumental in getting that project going, and we've been communicating with him on the project as well. So I'm sure he will want to attend that briefing and sit in and listen. So those are my updates. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Any others?
Can I ask a question? How's our telephone communication? That was all messed up today where you couldn't make any phone calls?
Oh, for goodness sakes, yes. Apparently we had a construction issue. I understand that there was a problem on Manning Avenue and telephone lines were cut into. And so we were struggling. I think it's a really good showing of our emergency management capabilities. We had our dispatch center out off-site. Was able to still do our core service of providing 911 services. But in fact, we were struggling late afternoon and returning calls, and even the cell services were interrupted for Verizon, et cetera. So.
The internet service was interrupted. Mm-hmm.
The internet also, yeah.
Just goes to show how dependent we are on technology nowadays, so. Yeah.
Okay, are there any other staff that are going to do reports?
I don't believe so, Mayor.
Okay. Seeing none, I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Oh, there. Yes. Now we will switch to, we'll take a few minutes break. We'll take a 10-minute break and then we'll switch.
It's going to be, Mayor.
Is it going to be quick?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind, we won't take a 10-minute break. We will switch our hats to the Reedley Redevelopment Agency. And I will open up that meeting and we will have our call to order and the roll call, please.
Board Member Chavez.
Here.
Salino.
Here.
Betancourt.
Yes.
Chairman Fast.
Here. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the RDA board on items of interest to the public within the board's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the RDA board not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the executive director's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the RDA board as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any board member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the board can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. Would anyone like to remove an item from the consent agenda? Anyone from the public?
I'll make the motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Board Member Chavez?
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Salino?
Yes.
Chairman Fast?
Yes.